As we watch the NBA playoffs, fans across the country and the world, for that matter, have witnessed the amazing feats of African-American stars like Allen Iverson, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kobe Bryant. Indeed, the vast majority of players today are black, roughly 80%, and nearly half the coaches are African-American as well. But that hasn't always been the case. Before Shaq and Kobe were even lacing up their baby shoes, players like Chuck Cooper, Don Barksdale, and Sweetwater Clifton were paving the way for black basketball players to play professionally. Sports writer and author Ron Thomas has tracked this history in his new book, They Cleared the Lane, the NBA's Black Pioneers. He comes to us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Ron, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to get a chance to talk to you, Tavis.
Glad to talk to you. Let's start with a little history here. So who was the first African-American to play in the NBA? And I should tell our audience, I've cheated. You point out in your book that there's not a simple answer to that question.
Well, it's very complicated. There's several answers. The first African-American to actually play in the NBA was Earl Lloyd. He played on Halloween night 1950, which was the opening night for the league that year. And he played for the Washington Capitals. Now, a lot of people may think that Chuck Cooper was the first black NBA player. And in a different context, he was, because he was the first black player to be drafted by an NBA team. He was drafted in the 1950 draft on the second round by the Boston Celtics. Earl Lloyd happened to be drafted on the ninth round of that day.
When you talk about folk like Lloyd and Cooper and Barksdale, what is essentially the significance of their careers?
Well, I think it's significant partly simply because back in the 1950s and the late 40s, there were these breakthroughs that black athletes made in different sports, one after another. There had been baseball with Jackie Robinson in 1947, and that actually opened the way for other athletes in other sports to integrate. And so in basketball, it's partly just the fact that pro basketball and the NBA in particular, it was getting its first black players. I should just mention there were black players playing pro basketball beginning way back in 1902, but they were not in the NBA. And there was about, I think, 70 players sprinkled throughout various leagues up until the NBA was integrated in 1950. And the other thing to me that's really important about black players coming into the league is that as you trace the first 20 years, a lot of players eventually started to change the game. I have a chapter about this early black superstars. And Elgin Baylor, his ability to play in the air, helped guys like Julius Erving. He set examples for Julius Erving to play in the air later. Guy Rogers was a great point guard. And when you see Jason Kidd now, you're sort of watching a newer version of Guy Rogers. When you see guys blocking shots, well, a lot of that really started with Bill Russell. He was the first to popularize the block shot because before, coaches used to tell defenders to stay on their feet, not to jump in the air to try to deflect a shot. Magic Johnson's dad used to have Magic watch Oscar Robertson on television because Oscar was 6'5", and his dad knew that Magic was going to be a tall point guard, so he wanted him to learn how to handle that position from watching an Oscar Robertson.
You mentioned Jackie Robinson a moment ago and that he integrated baseball, of course, back in 1947. We all know that his early years were very, very difficult in terms of hearing racial epithets and slurs all the time. Did the first black NBA stars receive the same kind of treatment, or perhaps I should say mistreatment, as it were?
Well, actually, they didn't in general. And the reason is that pro basketball actually was on the bottom of the popularity of sports when the league started. Actually, the NBA started in 1946. The league was really started by owners of professional hockey teams who also owned the arenas. And when the hockey season was over, they had all these open dates in the arenas. So they created this pro basketball league. But there wasn't a public clamor for it. So baseball, pro football, college football, college basketball, all of them are much more popular than the NBA. And so when the NBA was integrated, there wasn't a firestorm of interest or protest among fans because really nobody cared what happened in the NBA. So that was much different. The other thing that was an advantage for the basketball players was that most of the basketball players, both black and white, almost all of them had gone to college. And I think they were a little more sophisticated. And there was also more of a tradition of basketball players, black and white, playing with each other as they grew up. So that for many of the white basketball players in the NBA, it wasn't a shock or something brand new for them to play with or against black players.
Today, the Harlem Globetrotters are looked at as fun and a comedic form of basketball. But when they first started, they were much more than that. They did, in fact, represent some of the best players in the game. Talk a little about the role the Harlem Globetrotters played then and now.
Well, the Globetrotters and another team called the New York Wrens were the places where black players could play and really establish a reputation. They played on traveling teams, which would be sort of basketball's equivalents to the Negro Leagues in baseball. But rather than a league, it was just basically these two main teams traveling all over the country to big cities and also to small towns and just facing the best opposition that particular city had to offer. One of the interesting things about the Globetrotters is that they were, they've become known for their comedic routines, which they started actually because they were beating these little small town teams so badly that they thought rather than crush them by 60 points, maybe if we throw in some comedy routines, we'll keep the score relatively close and keep the crowd interested. But they were also tremendous players. And there was a series of games in the late 1940s where they played against a traveling team of college all-stars, which would be the best college players in the country. And the Globetrotters often beat them, definitely held their own. And then also in the late 40s, there was a series of games against the Minneapolis Lakers, who were the champions of first the league called the National Basketball League and then the NBA. And at least two times, I think in 1948 and 1949, the Globetrotters won those games. The other place, the big role the Globetrotters played in the NBA was that the NBA, again, as I mentioned before, was on the bottom of the barrel in terms of pro sports and college sports, too. So to survive economically, the owners often scheduled doubleheaders with the Globetrotters. The Globetrotters would play the first game, and they would really bring in the crowd, and then two NBA teams would play in the second game.
When you started researching this book, you found that a lot of this history had not been documented, Ron. And I know you've been covering the NBA for many, many years, but I know there had to be something that you learned that shocked you.
Well, really, what shocked me was I had no idea, and I had never read or heard of the fact that the NBA owners had originally had this understanding that they would not sign black players. I'd never seen that written before, and it just turned out that I found a guy named Dick Bennett who was a member of the Board of Governors in the late 1940s, and he told me the story of how that ban was broken. What happened was in late 1949, Ned Irish, the owner of the New York Knicks, he needed a center badly, just like they need one now. And the one he identified was Sweetwater Clifton, who was a star with the Globetrotters. He was 6'8", tremendous ball handler, great rebounder. He wanted to sign Clifton. Clifton wanted to lead the Globetrotters because he was tired of the worldwide travel. And so Irish came into a Board of Governors meeting and said, you know, I want to sign this guy. And they took a vote and voted him down. So several months later, Irish comes back and he says, I want to sign Sweetwater Clifton. And if you don't let me sign him, then I might pull the Knicks out of New York. And then the owners decided to have another vote. And this time, under that threat, they voted to let him sign him and also let Chuck Cooper be drafted. So that really broke the barrier. And then in the upcoming draft, Cooper was drafted. And then I think it was in May of that year, the Knicks did end up signing Sweetwater Clifton.
So many of the young NBA players today, Ron, are totally unfamiliar with much of the history that we're discussing in this conversation now. I wonder whether or not if they knew more about the history of the NBA and the role that African-Americans have played in it, whether or not you think it'd make a difference in their lives.
Well, I think it's important to appreciate what went on before you. I think just in general, that's the case. But I think particularly when we talk about contemporary black people having an understanding of the sacrifices that people made before them, I think it's just important to understand that. I think it gives us a better perspective on the successes we have now and the ease at which we sometimes can reach success. And the other thing it does, I think, is for some of these young guys, you know, you may have the best spin move in college basketball, but, you know, it would be good and maybe a little humbling to see some tapes of Earl Monroe to find out where that spin move came from. And I just think it gives people a better perspective on what their own talents are. And I just think history is valuable.
Ron Thomas is a sports writer and author of They Cleared the Lane, the NBA's Black Pioneers. He joined us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Ron, thanks for the book and thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on, Tavis.